Hazy circles of light overlap, their colors and sizes varied. Focus Features, a Comcast company. The O in focus is blurred. Participant Media. A car's headlights cut through darkness as it travels a bend beside a snaking river. River Road Entertainment. Fade to black. Focus Features presents. In association with Participant Media, River Road Entertainment. And Apache's Entertainment, Telecinco Cinema, a Monster Calls AIE, La Trini production. With the support of ICAA, ICEC. The image remains black. Nighttime. In a bedroom, a dark-haired, pale boy breathes heavily as he sleeps. Red light from a bedside alarm clock illuminates his face. Daytime. In a cemetery, a brick church crumbles. The ground disintegrates into a gaping chasm. The boy lies at the edge of the chasm, clutching a woman's hand. The hand slips free, and the boy startles awake in bed. He wipes his tearful eyes with the back of his hand.
How does the story begin?
The clock strikes 12:07.
It begins like so many stories.
The boy goes to a window.
With a boy. Too old to be a kid. Too young to be a man.
He gazes at the dark cemetery on a nearby hilltop. The brick church stands undamaged.
And a nightmare.
A giant gnarled tree sways in the breeze at the opposite end of the cemetery. The boy stares through the rain-flecked window. Cut to black. Close views follow the tip of a pencil drawing on paper. Lewis McDougall. A dark splotch spreads across the paper. Sigourney Weaver. The sketched hands of a clock spin to 12:07. Interlocking gears give way to streams of dark liquid splashing over paper. Felicity Jones. A sketch of a door closes and a keyhole spreads open, revealing a castle. Toby Kebble. More splotches of colorful liquid flow across the paper. And Liam Neeson as the monster. An illustration shows a church tower covered in scaffolding, based upon the novel written by Patrick Ness, from an original idea by Siobhan Dowd. Screenplay by Patrick Ness. Directed by J.A. Bayona. A gate opens and a rising view settles on a watercolor painting of the hilltop cemetery. A monster calls. Daytime. In his room, the dark-haired boy buttons up a white dress shirt. He pulls on a gray sweater. The boy makes his bed. In a kitchen, he puts bread in a toaster. In a laundry room, the boy loads clothes into a washing machine. He pulls a tray out of the machine and opens a bottle of detergent. In the kitchen, the boy takes a jar from a cabinet. Prescription pill bottles rest on the shelf beside it. He sits at the table, eating toast and jam. The washing machine finishes a spin cycle. In his room, the boy pulls on a gray sock. He pauses and looks up. Now the boy cracks open a door and peers into a room with a stoic expression. Inside, a pale woman with short dark hair lies sleeping in bed. Medicine bottles rest on her nightstand. The boy gazes at her. Later, he takes keys from a tray, hanging photos depict the boy smiling with the dark-haired woman. The dark-haired boy steps outside his rustic home into an overgrown front garden, putting on a scarf. Later, he strolls down a walkway beside a small river. The hilltop cemetery stands in the distance.
It's got two fundamental constants.
In a classroom, the boy sits in the back, scribbling colorful drawings in his textbook.
It's a number that emerges from asking, what is the mathematical function?
The boy turns a page. Tucked in the textbook, he finds a handwritten note that reads, "See you after school, as always." A tall boy in front of him peers over his shoulder at the dark-haired boy. They lock eyes.
Connor?
The dark-haired boy closes his book.
You're right there, Connor. You look tired. Are you getting enough rest?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Because, you know, if you ever wanted to talk...
I'm fine.
Okay.
The teacher walks off and Connor glances away.
Everyone, eyes front. Now, pi is the ratio of the circumference.
In the schoolyard, Connor falls on his face.
Careful there, O'Malley. You might fall.
Are you drunk or something? He'll have to get his slap and mother to kiss it for him.
A blonde boy kicks Connor's backpack. The tall boy kneels over him.
You're always off in your own little dream world. What's there? So interesting.
Another boy steps on Connor's hand.
Get off.
The tall bully pinches Connor's tongue.
You've been a good boy. Remember, O'Malley, good boys don't talk.
Birds fly away from the school. Later, Connor walks down a narrow road. He angrily kicks a rock. He reaches his rustic house and unlocks the front door. Inside, Connor finds an old film projector resting on a stool in the living room.
Hey, Connor. Hey, Mom.
The pale, dark-haired woman descends the stairs.
What is that?
It's a surprise.
So, this is a VCR?
This is much better than a VCR. It's your grandpa's old film projector. There we go. I wish you could have known him.
Who?
Grandpa. Even Grandma softened up around him.
Yeah, right.
They thread a film.
Here we go.
Connor turns it on and the reels begin to turn. He smiles. Later, he and his mother lie on the couch watching a black and white film. Airplanes attack a giant ape on top of a skyscraper.
A bunch of assholes.
Why are they trying to guilt King Kong?
People don't like what they don't understand. They get scared.
King Kong could just smash them all. Break them into a million pieces. Yeah.
King Kong slips, but holds on to the skyscraper. Connor looks up to find his mother asleep. He looks back to the film as the giant ape gets shot by a plane. King Kong stumbles backward, catching himself on the skyscraper's point. Connor's eyes go wide and he lifts his head from his mother's chest. King Kong loses his grip and falls backward off the skyscraper, striking the building's tiers as he falls. Connor stares at the film in shock. In the dark hilltop cemetery, the branches of the giant gnarled tree blow in the breeze. In his room, Connor sits at his desk with headphones on. He taps the tip of a pencil against the blank page of a sketchbook. Focused, Connor begins to draw. He draws a rectangle, then taps his pencil against the one unfinished edge. The image fades into a view of Connor's rectangular window, framing the hilltop cemetery in the distance. Connor remains at his desk with the headphones on. Connor glances at the window and takes off his headphones. He looks at his bedroom door, which lies cracked open.
Mom?
Connor glances back at the window. He picks up his pencil and continues drawing. The boy traces several adjacent lines. He looks back at the window. Ominous fog hangs over the hilltop cemetery. Connor returns his attention to the drawing. The boy sketches curved lines, then shades his artwork. His alarm clock strikes 12:07. Connor glances at the clock, then continues drawing. He adds a series of short lines to a long, curved one, then shades another area. Connor finishes a detailed sketch of the gnarled tree standing in the church cemetery. A pen rolls across his desk. It falls to the floor. The pen continues rolling and hits the wall beneath Connor's window. A toy disc rotates, reflecting an animation of a man running. A breeze blows sketches pinned to the wall. Connor stands from his desk. Outside, the backyard gate of his house lies open. Connor lifts his window. A strong wind blows inside. The boy gazes at the hilltop cemetery in the distance. A narrow chunk of wood breaks free from the tree's thick trunk. A long foot emerges from the earth, glowing as if filled with fiery embers. Another piece of the trunk rips from its roots and rises like an open hand. It punches the ground. Another arm forms from the trunk. It rips off a large branch. At his window, Connor watches anxiously as branches fall away from the tree. Tendrils of wood rise along the curved trunk, filled with the fiery glow. A gnarled wooden face opens its glowing red eyes. The towering tree-like monster takes a step. Connor flinches. A puddle reflects the giant creature as it stomps down the hill toward Connor's neighborhood. The boy watches the monster move through a dense patch of trees. It crushes a streetlight in its hand, then stomps onto train tracks, bending the metal. Lightning flashes, casting the tree monster's shadow on Connor's house. Its arms, legs, and body resemble a human-like figure. Towering over the house, the monster stands at the boy's window. The giant looks down through a second-story window at Connor.
I have come to get you, Connor O'Malley.
The monster leans close to the window and roars. Its mouth glows a fiery red. Connor hides.
Why don't you run, Connor O'Malley? Why don't you run for your mother?
Connor slams his door shut.
You leave her alone! I'm not afraid of you!
The tree monster punches through the wall and grabs Connor in its fist. It pulls the boy outside. Connor peers up at the creature's imposing face.
I will visit you again on further nights, Connor O'Malley, and I will shake your walls until you wake, and then I will tell you 3 stories.
You're going to tell me stories?
I am. I will tell you 3 stories, and when I finish my stories, you will tell me a fourth.
I don't know anything about stories.
You will tell me a fourth, and it will be the truth.
What are you talking about?
This truth that you hide, the truth you dream. You will tell me your nightmare.
No.
Yes, that will be your truth.
And if I don't?
The monster fills with a fiery glow and wooden tendrils snake from its mouth. At his desk, Connor startles and opens his eyes. Rain pours outside his window. The boy stares off in shock. In his mother's bed, Connor crawls under the covers beside her. She awakens and rolls over, then pulls the blanket from over his head.
Oh, God. I was asleep.
Connor faces away from her.
Should be in your own bed, Con.
Just 5 minutes.
That's not true.
Yes, it is. Con. Just 5 minutes, I promise.
Connor settles onto his pillow.
Night, night.
His mother strokes his hair. The boy moves closer and wraps his arm around her. She stares off with a thoughtful gaze. Daytime. Medicine bottles cover the top of a dresser. Connor stirs awake and looks over at his mother. Outside, he trudges through the mud wearing rubber boots. He reaches the slope of the hill and pauses. An elaborate wrought iron gate blocks a path leading up to the cemetery. One side of the gate slowly swings open. Connor approaches with a hesitant gaze. He takes hold of the gate. The boy gazes at the distant tree standing in the fog-covered cemetery. He shakes his head and closes the gate. At home, he steps through the front door and takes off his coat. His mother stands in the living room with a well-dressed older woman. Connor approaches them.
Strange woman and her strange child. We have to discuss this now.
Hey, Con.
Ah, there's the little man.
Where did you say you got these?
From a very nice old people's home. They're clearing it up to make flats, and I'll be the agent. Your mother needs a cup of tea. Green, no sugar. I take mine black.
What do you think, Con?
She wears a wig.
He loves it. Go on.
Okay.
Go on, try something else.
In the kitchen, Connor pulls items from a cupboard. He spots his mother through a crack in an open door. The boy watches his mother and grandmother arguing. His grandmother approaches. Connor takes a kettle off the stove.
You and I need to have a talk.
I'm making tea.
Connor.
I said I'm making
tea. We have to... I'm not the enemy, Connor. I'm here to help your mother.
I know why you're here.
I'm here because 12-year-old boys shouldn't be wiping down counters without being asked to first.
Do you want
to
do it?
Less of your cheek.
She's always sick after the treatments. She'll be better tomorrow, and then you can go home.
She'll seem better tomorrow. She needs to talk about this with
talk
you.
Talk to me about what?
About your coming to live with me.
I'm never coming to live
with you. Listen to me, Connor. If your mother...
There's no if! She'll be better, and then you can go.
Oh, Lizzie. Oh, my God. Hold on. Where's the medicine? Connor?
Connor enters the room.
Connor, please give me the medicine. Hurry.
Lizzie kneels on the floor in pain.
It's coming.
Connor hands his grandmother the medicine.
Here you go.
He watches anxiously.
Deep breath.
Lizzie takes the medicine.
Deep breath. Deep breath. Deep breath.
A sickly young woman stares at her son. His grandmother looks at Connor. Later, she packs clothes in a suitcase in Connor's bedroom. The middle-aged woman opens the door and faces him. She hands Connor folded blankets.
Just don't touch anything.
Trust me, I'll be doing my very best not to. Our conversation isn't over, young man.
Oh, yes, it is.
He heads downstairs. Later, Connor sleeps on the couch in the living room. The boy stirs gently in his sleep. In his nightmare, the church crumbles. Connor holds on to his mother's hand. She slips away. Connor wakes on the couch. Sitting up, the boy steps on a remote. A tray opens on a DVD player. Connor looks to the player as its clock turns to 12:07. Items roll across the floor. A breeze rustles Connor's hair. The items roll into the kitchen. Wrapping a blanket over his shoulders, Connor heads into the kitchen. Items rattle on the shelves. Several items gather at the bottom of a door leading outside. A thin crack stretches up the wood. Connor steps closer to the trembling door. He goes outside to find the giant tree monster waiting.
What took you so long? It is time for me to tell you the first tale.
I don't need a tale. I need a bus ticket for my grandma.
It is time for me to tell you the... Where do you think you're going? I will be listened to. I am as old as this land, and I will...
What do you know about anything?
I know everything about you, Connor O'Malley.
No, you don't! If you did, you know I don't have time to listen to stupid stories from a stupid tree that is just a dream.
A dream? What is a dream, Connor O'Malley? And who is to say that it is not everything else that is a dream?
Never mind.
I came to see you today because I thought...
You thought I might have come to topple your enemies, slay your dragons.
Or at least help me with my grandmother. But all you want to do is tell me stories.
Stories of how I topple my enemies. Stories of I slew dragons. Let me tell you a tale of when I came walking. Let me tell you of the end of a wicked queen and how I made sure she was never seen again.
The monster stares at the boy, who shakes his head.
Go on, then.
Good.
The creature stretches its massive wooden arms. Thin branches extend from the monster's hands and envelop Connor. A smile spreads on the monster's giant face. Connor closes his eyes as the branches surround him, causing complete darkness.
What do you see?
Nothing. There are leaves in the way.
Use your imagination, Connor O'Malley. What do you see?
Bright points of light shine in the darkness.
I see a spark.
Yes, and?
No, it's water. It's watercolor.
Keep looking.
Watercolor style animation appears.
Whoa. Whoa, indeed. Long ago, before this was a town with roads and trains and cars, this was a kingdom.
Here, we don't even have a Tesco.
It was a prosperous kingdom with a wise king who had won peace for his people. But peace had come at a price. The king had lost all three of his sons in battle to giants.
A giant stomps a warrior.
To dragons.
A dragon kills another.
To armies of men led by great wizards.
Sounding pretty fairy-tale-ish.
You wouldn't say that if you heard the screams of a man killed by a spear.
A woman in a glowing dress falls from a castle tower.
The queen was unable to bear the loss of all their three sons, leaving the king alone in despair with the company of his only remaining heir, his orphaned grandson.
The king gives the boy a toy horse.
The child was raised as a prince, winning the love of the kingdom with his gallantry and good heart.
Now older, the prince faces a cheering crowd after a jousting match.
His people loved him.
At a royal wedding, the king marries a thin woman.
He was nearly a man when his grandfather took a new wife.
The woman turns from white to black.
The king felt ill, and rumor began to spread that she was an evil witch, that she was bent on taking the throne for herself by poisoning the king.
The queen serves the ailing king a drink.
A few weeks later, the king died.
The king drops the chalice, spilling bright red liquid.
The prince was too young to take the king's place. So, by law, the queen would rule for another year.
Sitting on a throne, the queen puts on a golden crown. Blackness surrounds her.
The future was uncertain.
An image of a skull replaces her face. In the wooded area, a young, plainly dressed woman joins the prince.
The prince, meanwhile, had given away his heart. She was beautiful and smart, and though only a farmer's daughter, the kingdom smiled on the match.
A spider transforms into the queen's hand.
The queen, however, she was rather enjoying being queen. What better way to remain so than to marry the prince herself?
What? That's disgusting. She was his grandmother.
Step-grandmother, and still a young, beautiful woman herself, don't forget. The prince, however, didn't like the idea either.
The queen turns into flying creatures. The prince flees with his love.
He took the farmer's daughter, and they rode away into the night. They stopped to rest under the branches of a yew tree.
That's you.
The next morning, the prince awoke. "Arise, my beloved," he said, but the farmer's daughter did not stir. Was when the prince noticed the blood.
Blood?
Someone had killed his beloved in the night.
What?
A drop of blood becomes the queen.
The queen, he cried. The queen has murdered my bride. The villagers, full of fury and vengeance, rose up at the crime. It was then that I came walking.
A giant tree monster sprouts from the ground behind the villagers. The prince and the villagers shoot flaming arrows at the castle. The monster walks past them. It arrives at the flaming castle and peers into a tower.
The queen was never seen again.
The monster grabs the queen.
Good! He deserved it. Now, I don't suppose you can help me with my grandma.
The story is not yet finished. I took the queen and carried her far enough away so the townspeople would never find her, to a village by the sea where she began a new life.
But she killed the farmer's daughter. How can you save a murderer? You really are a monster.
I never said she killed a farmer's daughter. I only said that the prince said it was so. The prince never fell asleep that night, but waited for the farmer's daughter to be lost in her dreams, and then began his real plan.
The prince raises a dagger.
What?
He knew her death would start a fire that would consume the queen entire.
The prince looks at his blood-stained hands.
That's a terrible story, and a cheat.
It's a true story. Many things that are true feel like a cheat. Kingdoms get the princes they deserve. Farmers' daughters die for no reason. And sometimes witches merit saving. Quite often, actually, you'd be surprised.
So, the good prince is a murderer, and the evil queen wasn't a witch after all?
No. The queen most certainly was a witch, and could well have been on her way to great evil. Who can say?
And why did you save her, then?
Because what she was not was a murderer. She hadn't poisoned the king. He had merely grown old.
Did the prince ever get caught?
No. He became a much beloved king. He ruled happily until the end of his long days. Oh, yes.
I don't get it. Who's the good guy here?
There is not always a good guy, Connor O'Malley. Nor is there always a bad one. Most people are somewhere in between.
So how's all this meant to save me from Grandma?
It is not her you need saving from.
Connor stares at the monster in thought. Cut to black. Daytime. In a school hallway, Connor stands alone, watching students pass by. In class, Connor sketches in a notebook at his desk. The bully turns around and looks at him. Connor looks up, meeting the boy's gaze. The bully turns around, and Connor takes a deep breath. Connor arrives home. He takes off his scarf and enters a second door. His grandmother looks over.
Good. You're home. Your mum's upstairs. She wants to talk to you.
What?
Your father's flying in on Sunday.
Dad's coming. From America.
Go on. She's waiting. And pack a bag. You're coming to stay with me for a few days. Go on.
Connor gives her a look, then heads upstairs. He enters his room to find his mother sitting by the bed. She smiles at him.
That tree's amazing. It's been here for thousands of years. What do you think?
She holds a wig.
I think Grandma's trying to turn me into Tina Turner.
She must be a fan. Why am I going to stay with Grandma? Are you going back to the hospital?
Come here, Con.
Connor sits beside his mother.
This latest treatment's not doing what it's supposed to. So they're going to adjust it. Try something else.
That's all?
That's all.
Are you sure?
I'm sure.
Because you could tell me, you know.
She gazes at her son. Connor stares back at his sickly mother. The boy hugs her. Tears well in her eyes. Connor cries, his face pressed against her. Outside, Connor smashes a TV set in an alley. He knocks over a garbage can, then walks away. An overhead view tracks a crowd of students entering the school. Connor stands still among the moving crowd. Scowling, he stares at his bully, who sits among other students. The bully spots him and they lock eyes. Connor walks away. Later, he walks alone on a grassy slope. The bully and his two friends follow.
Wait, Ruskell, where are you going?
They pin him against a wall.
Don't touch him.
Don't touch him, it's such a punishable face.
I said don't touch him.
The bully faces Connor.
O'Malley and I have an understanding. I'm the only one who touches him. Isn't that right?
Now tell me,
why is it every time I turn around, you're there looking at me? Getting a bit odd, don't you think?
The bully steps away, then hits him.
Sorry, that was a bit harsh.
Life's not really going your way today.
Fade to black. Wind blows leaves down a street of brick townhomes. In a house, Connor's grandmother sets her wristwatch while looking at a grandfather clock.
I have a house to show. I'm trusting you here alone until your father shows up.
I'm not 5 years old.
She points at the clock.
This is the correct time. Not the one on your phone or on the computer, not even on the news. It was my mother's, your great-grandmother's. Perfect timekeeping for over 100 years. Connor, pick up your rucksack.
Connor obeys.
I don't want your father to think I'm keeping you in a pigsty.
Not much chance of that.
Now, when you go to the hospital, your father may not notice how tired your mum is getting, okay? So we have to make sure that he doesn't overstay his welcome. Not that that's historically been a problem. No eggs. You've already had eggs twice this week. If you get hungry, there's spinach in the fridge which you can steam.
Yeah, sure.
Don't touch anything.
She leaves.
I'll do my very best not to.
Connor opens his bag and takes out his headphones. He plugs them into a digital music player and puts them on. The boy enters another bedroom and switches on a lamp. He picks up a pair of glasses with tortoise shell frames and puts them on. Connor quickly takes them off and blinks heavily. The boy goes downstairs. He searches the refrigerator, then looks into the pantry. He opens a tin. Connor finds chocolate chip cookies inside. In his bedroom, he sharpens a pencil. He places a curled pencil shaving on a blank page in his sketchbook. Beneath the shaving, Connor sketches the prints from the monster's story. In the well-kept backyard, he hits bushes with a stick. In the living room, Connor touches several porcelain figurines. He rings a decorative bell, then rearranges small items on a table. In his room, he continues to sketch. The prince sits on a throne with the pencil shaving as a crown. Strolling through a hallway, Connor pauses to gaze up a short staircase leading to a closed door. The boy takes off his headphones. Cautiously, he walks up the staircase. Connor tries the door's bronze knob. He peers through the keyhole. A view from the other side shows the boy's eye. Connor rushes downstairs, leaving his headphones on a wooden trunk in the hallway. He goes to the front door and pulls it open. A handsome, scruffy man smiles at Connor.
Dad.
At an amusement park, Connor strolls with his father. They play around with a machine that measures body mass index. The scruffy man flicks Connor's hair, and they continue strolling. Connor tears off a piece of a hot dog bun and tosses it to a seagull. He cowers as more seagulls swarm their table. Connor rides a merry-go-round with his arms outstretched. His father looks at him and smiles. In a restaurant, the father and son sit across from each other.
How you doing, Con? You look tired.
I'm fine. Mom's on this new medicine, and it'll make her better. She goes into hospital once every 2 weeks, and they pump the medicine into her bloodstream. She's sick for the next few days, but she's better again.
Connor plays with chopsticks. His father stares at him with concern.
Are your little sister's doing better?
Half-sister.
Yeah. I'd still love you to meet her. I'm talking with your grandma about bringing you out to L.A.
You want me to come to L.A.?
Yeah, absolutely. You'd like that, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
We were thinking over Christmas, that way you can be back here in time for school.
So you mean just for a visit, then?
Yeah, it'd be great.
I don't want to live with grandma. It's an old lady's house with old lady's things. Can't touch anything or sit anywhere. Can't even leave a mess for 2 seconds.
Connor, I know.
I want to have my own room in my own house with my own things.
Well, you wouldn't have that in America, Con. There's barely enough room for the three of us.
I don't care.
Connor, listen.
She's so strict.
Your family, your life, your friends.
The house is like a museum.
All of it is here, okay? It'd be unfair to take you out of it.
Unfair to who?
Connor.
The boy lowers his gaze. Now, Connor's father parks outside his grandmother's house.
Doesn't look like your grandma's home yet.
She sometimes goes back to the hospital after I go to bed. And I just let her sleep in a chair.
Hey, just because your grandma doesn't like me doesn't make her a bad person.
She says you're all start and no finish.
Well, she's entitled to her own opinion.
How long are you here for?
As long as I can be.
What does that mean?
You don't have a lot of money, and Americans don't get a lot of holiday.
You're not American.
No, but I live there now. I'll come back whenever I need to, and you're going to come to LA for Christmas.
In your cramped house, so there's no room for me.
Connor.
Why did you come?
Connor glares at his father. He gets out of the car.
Connor, wait.
Connor's father rolls down the window.
Connor, I'll see you tomorrow, yeah?
Still loads of time.
Inside, Connor turns on the lights. He steps through the entryway and pauses. He takes his backpack from a chair and throws it to the floor. He kicks it. The bag lands in the living room. Connor takes off his coat and throws it down. He hurls a pillow to the floor, then jumps up and down on an armchair.
No!
Around the room, the porcelain trinkets wobble. Connor leaps to the floor. The grandfather clock strikes 6. Slowly, Connor approaches the antique clock. He turns the key in the clock's door and opens it. Connor grabs the swinging pendulum. Staring at the clock face, the boy opens its glass covering. He moves the clock's hour hand from 6 to 12. The hand breaks off. Connor stares at its pointed tip in his fingers. The clock reads 12:07. The boy slowly turns. He finds the giant monster crouched within the room.
As destruction goes, that was remarkably pitiful. Now, I've come to tell you the second tale.
Is it as bad as the last one?
It ends with proper destruction, if that's what you mean. It's about a man who thought only of himself, a man who wasn't as generous as he should have been, a man who gets punished very badly indeed.
Stories aren't real, though. They don't help anything.
Stories are wild creatures, Connor O'Malley. When you let them loose, who knows what havoc they may wreak. Oh, yes.
Okay. Go on, then.
The monster bows its head and branches spread along the ceiling and walls like vines. The branches knock over a lamp. The wooden tendrils overtake a tea set resting on a shelf. Connor anxiously looks on as they weave around items throughout the entire room, including the grandfather clock. The branches surround Connor, and a light shines on him from above. He looks up, and a rising view ascends through a tunnel of writhing wood. A bird flies through it to an animated world.
150 years ago, the future came. Factories grew on the landscape like weeds. Trees fell, rivers blackened, and the sky choked on smoke and ash.
The bird flees the pollution.
But they were still green, if you knew where to look. On the edge of this town lived a stubborn man who refused to change.
The bearded man sniffs a flower.
He dealt in the old ways of medicine, herbs and barks and concoctions brewed from berries and leaves. Villagers only ever called him the apothecary.
A what?
The apothecary, an old-fashioned name for pharmacist.
Oh, what did you just say?
In church, a young man faces a congregation.
There was also a young parson in this village, an enlightened man, and a kind one who just wanted the very best for his congregation. He preached against the apothecary's use of the old ways, and the apothecary's foul temper and greed made certain some of these sermons fell on eager ears.
Villagers slammed their doors in the apothecary's face.
Much as he tried to keep on helping the community, his business sank, which only made him grow bitter.
The apothecary climbs a wooded hill that becomes the monster.
On the parsonage grounds, there also lived a yew tree.
It parts trees.
That's the hill where you live.
And the yew tree is the most important of all the healing trees.
Why?
Its berries, its bark, they thrum and burn and twist with life. It can cure almost any ailment.
Really? Anything?
Anything that can be cured if mixed by the right apothecary.
Ribbons of white light trace the branches of the gnarled tree. The bearded apothecary approaches it, carrying a shiny axe.
The apothecary wanted the yew tree very badly, but in order to harvest these things, he would have to cut it down, and this the parson would not allow.
The apothecary throws down his axe and sulks away. Now, the parson spins two young girls beneath the tree.
The parson had two daughters who were the light of his life. He was a caring, loving father who'd have done anything for their sake. But one day, both little girls were struck by a terrible sickness. And nothing the parson did helped. No cure from the more modern doctors. No prayer. Nothing.
The parson races a horse-drawn carriage through the woods.
There was no choice but to approach the apothecary.
He kneels before the apothecary's hut.
Will you not help my daughters? The parson begged. Will you not save two innocent girls? Why should I? Said the apothecary. You have driven away my business with your preachings, and you have refused me the yew tree, my best source of healing. You may have the yew tree, said the parson. I will preach sermons in your favor. I will do anything if you would only save my daughters. You would give up everything you believed in, said the apothecary. If it would save them, I would give up everything. Then there is nothing I can do to help you.
The apothecary steps into a glowing opening of the yew tree's trunk. It closes behind him. The parson holds his daughters close as the tree sinks into a widening chasm. The two girls fall inside. Now the parson and his wife stand in the cemetery, facing two headstones.
The very next day, both of the parson's daughters die.
What?
And that night, I came walking.
Good. He deserves all the punishment he gets.
Indeed. It was shortly after midnight that I tore the parson's home from its very foundations.
Parson? What are you talking about? The apothecary is the evil one.
He was greedy and rude. But he was still a healer. The parson, what was he?
The monster tears the roof off the animated house.
Man of faith without faith.
It throws the roof down the hill. Connor stares up at the monster in wonder. It crouches close to him.
Belief is half of all healing. Belief in the cure. Belief in the future that awaits. Your belief is valuable, so you must be careful where you put it. And in whom matter.
The monster stands.
Tell me, Connor O'Malley, what shall I destroy next?
What?
It is most satisfying, I can assure you. Come on, tell me. What should I destroy?
Snap the chimney?
The chimney. Next.
Throw away their beds.
The monster punches through a wall and flings a bed into a tree.
Smash the furniture!
It pummels the house to bits. Rubble falls at Connor's feet.
Break the windows!
Windows? Break them yourself.
The monster extends a stick from its finger.
Come on.
Connor grins, then breaks off the large stick. The boy charges to the house and smashes a window.
Harder, Connor O'Malley, come on, harder. That's it. Yes. Feels good, doesn't it? Yes.
Connor smashes his grandmother's things. Using a piece of wood, Connor bashes a piece of badly damaged furniture. He stops, then looks around the completely destroyed living room. The boy scans the debris-covered floor, his expression turning to panic. Connor steps to a partially open door and looks at his grandmother in the entryway. She peers in his direction. Stepping back, he discards the piece of wood. Her eyes wide, his grandmother slowly approaches the living room. With a stunned look, she pauses in the doorway. Connor stands in the middle of the demolished room. His grandmother opens the door. She covers her mouth. Connor glances downward, then begins to cry. With a tearful gaze, his grandmother kneels over the broken grandfather clock. She puts both hands on the clock, then looks at Connor and gets to her feet. The middle-aged woman wears a deeply disturbed look.
Grandma. Grandma. Grandma, please.
She knocks over furniture. She moves closer to Connor. The boy wears an anguished expression. His grandma shuffles out of the room. Connor watches her go. She closes the door behind her. Connor stands among the destruction. Upstairs, he trembles as he opens his grandma's bedroom door.
Grandma.
He finds a stack of folded clothing on her neatly made bed. The boy looks over his shoulder. Connor brings his eye to the keyhole of the locked room. Leaning against the doorframe, Connor wears a sad expression. Daytime. Connor lies in bed, fully clothed and wearing his shoes. He sits up and stares off. The boy opens the door. He lingers in the doorway, then makes his way downstairs. Connor finds his father cooking in the kitchen.
Heard you like them sunny side up.
What are you doing here?
What do you think?
His father serves him food.
Grandma called very early this morning. She's gone to the hospital to see your mum. Your mum's had a bad turn, Con.
Connor stares at his dad.
I need to see her.
Look, we'll see what happens today and maybe you can visit for a little while this afternoon.
The boy glances off. His dad nods to the destroyed room.
I can see how upset you are.
I didn't mean to. I don't know what happened.
The worst things happen at sea.
What does that mean? Aren't you going to punish me?
What could possibly be the point in that?
Later, Connor and his dad clean up the living room. The scruffy man looks at a piece of debris.
I gotta say, champ, this is really just amazingly thorough.
He finds a stack of discs. A label reads, Connor, age 5.
Oh, buried treasure. These must be those, the home movies your mum used to send to me when I first moved away.
Why did you move away?
We were young. Too young, you know, we had big dreams and...
What kind of dreams?
Well, your mum wanted to go to art college.
Really?
Yeah. She didn't go, but she wanted to.
What happened? Because mum got pregnant with me.
Hey. Your mum never regretted having you. You were only ever good news. And I know that for a fact, because the one thing she regretted was marrying me.
Why did she marry you then?
Because I'm handsome.
Connor smiles.
Your mum was amazing. And she still is. And we were in love. I mean, I still love her. But you'll see that... love isn't enough. It doesn't carry you through.
So you didn't get happily ever after?
No, but that's life, you know? Most of us just get messily ever after. That's all right.
He looks at Connor's drawing of the prince.
Now, even I'm happy you turned out like her.
Connor smiles. Later, he looks at a framed photo of his healthy mom. She wears a bright smile. Connor looks at another picture of his mom as a young girl hugging her father. Another framed photo depicts his grandma as a young woman. At the hospital, Connor's grandma sits in a hallway with her arms crossed. At the end of the hall, Connor stands holding 2 coffee cups. A man carrying a briefcase leaves a room and walks past him. Wearing a suit, the man approaches Connor's grandma in the hall. The boy watches them quietly chat. Connor enters the hospital room that the man left.
You're telling me now what to do, so I'm pulled in every
direction. You're going to take him out? You're going to take him out of school then?
He looks at his parents. Connor hands his dad a coffee cup.
Thank you. I'm going to go and find something to eat. Do you want anything, kid?
I want you to stop calling me kid.
Fair enough.
His dad opens the door, then turns to Connor's mom.
I'm sorry, Lizzie.
He leaves.
Who was that man in the suit?
Just... nothing.
What happened this morning?
Nothing. It's fine.
Connor crosses to a window.
Just had a bit of a bad reaction. But there's one more thing they're gonna try, and it's a medicine that's had some really good results.
Why didn't they try it in the first place?
Well, because this is something you take when the other stuff hasn't worked the way they want it to.
Does that mean it's too late?
No, of course it doesn't mean it's too late.
Are you sure?
I believe every word I say.
Belief is half of all healing. Belief in the cure. Belief in the future that awaits.
Yeah.
Smiling, she leans toward her son.
And you know that tree that I'm always going on about?
Yeah.
Well, this drug, it's made from trees like that.
It is?
Yeah.
Seriously?
All this time, we could have gone out there and just chopped it down. No, not that one. That one's our friend.
Connor nods. Later, he sits alone in his room at his grandma's house. His brow tensed, the boy stares at his watch as the time changes to 12:07. Connor taps his foot on the carpeted floor. He stops tapping. The boy rushes downstairs. On the backyard patio, he looks around.
Where are you?
Trees rustle.
I am here.
The monster arrives.
So can you do it? Can you make my mom better?
If your mother can be healed, the yew tree will do it.
The monster sits on the house.
Well, that's a yes.
You still don't know why you called me.
I didn't call you. And even if I did, it was obviously for my mom.
Was it?
Why